Hello, friends. It's me, Matthew, and welcome to another Cozy Pant with me and my best friend, James. Okay.
Angel of music, you're a Herman. Show me your panties.
Am I your angel of music?
You are my angel of music.
Me?
Come on me, angel of music.
Now, wait a moment. I don't know if he's the Phantom or just a pigeon at the opera. Would that be a better sequel? The pigeon of the opera. Wait, that's the high E.
That's the one.
Coo for me.
Coo. He's obsessed with pigeons.
Well,
there's no stopping him.
We've had a lot of Phantom on the mind lately.
Oh, Matthew, love is dead. Love died.
Well, so, of course, as I'm sure you're all aware, Andrew Lloyd Webber made Phantom of the Opera the 25th. Well, I was trying to remember the year. What year was that made? 2004-ish? Or 6?
11, I thought.
Oh, okay. No, 2011 is when they filmed Love Never Dies.
Is that true?
I think so.
Wow.
Here's the thing. Okay, so Andrew Lloyd Webber has made available, or at least his company, has made available for 2 days. It's over now, so you missed it.
It's over now.
The filmed concert version of Phantom of the Opera. And then a week later, they made available Love Never Dies, the horrible, horrible sequel.
It's not a good sequel. Now, a sequel to Phantom of the Opera is ill-advised under any circumstances. However,
exactly.
It could work. It doesn't have to be terrible, but it chose to be.
Yeah.
It chose, in so many, many ways, to be the worst thing.
I mean, for one thing, it's 3 billion hours long.
It's normal. It's, in fact, I think shorter than the first one.
It
feels endless.
Yeah. So someone referred to it as, instead of Love Never Dies, Paint Never Dries. Ha ha ha. Because it is just interminable. There's like 4 plot beats in the whole thing.
Yes.
It takes forever for nothing to happen.
There is, it feels like a 20-minute song that's just the Phantom singing to Christine, "Remember that we fucked once." And no song is memorable, so I can't even hum a few bars, because there is nothing, aside from 4 notes from other shows and other compositions. Throughout the show, there are 4 notes from other songs.
Yes,
they
constantly
keep popping up in things.
It's always different songs.
Yes, sometimes it's from The Nightmare Before Christmas, sometimes it's from Star Trek.
Bizarrely, there is a moment like in the play when James and I both perked up, because we were like, are they just doing the Star Wars theme?
Star Trek.
Jesus, Star Trek. It's exactly the sound at the beginning of original series. Dun, 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 dun.
And then there are like 4 notes from a whole bunch of songs from the original. And you're like, ah, yes. No, they teased us.
It was a hint.
Matthew, they teased us.
Yeah. So when the musical was finally over, when the show was done, you turned to me and you said, I think that is the worst musical I've ever seen. And
that's,
I think,
true.
You're right.
I think it's the worst musical I've ever seen. And I've seen O Calcutta. I've seen Tokyo Can Can. I've seen a great many musical miasmas. And, oh, I think it was the worst one.
Now, yeah, no, I agree. I was about to say, I saw Tale of Two Cities, the musical. And it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad. But I think Love Never Dies has a toxicity.
It is super toxic, yes.
That is appalling. I mean, not the, you know, the Phantom always had sort of like toxic male masculinity issues. Like he always had sort of the incel thing.
Well, he is an incel. He is the patron saint of incels.
Yeah. So he always had like, I don't know, man problems. But this one takes all the things about Phantom, the original, that shouldn't work, and isolates them and magnifies them.
Well, so the Phantom is our hero this time. Not
unambiguously.
Sort of our ambiguous love triangle, like, oh, there's the bad boy who has this gift and he's mysterious and brooding, and then there's the handsome good boy, and I should want the good boy, but the bad boy has this power over me, this sort of Twilight or 50 Shades dynamic that's so popular. I can see what the first one was going for. But in this one, the Phantom is unambiguously the hero. Raoul is a drunken lout who has gambled away his fortune.
Christine's a villain.
Christine?
I think so.
Okay, well, so Christine needs to be punished for having made the wrong choice the first time.
That's what I mean. Christine is the one who neglected him.
Yes.
And it really, the musical condemns and punishes Christine.
Boy, howdy does it. So the song about how they fucked, she keeps saying that he left her, and so she abandoned him for Raoul. I don't know when that happened, so they must have had a little connubial kiss and hug during one of the two times she and the Phantom were alone together. For like 5 minutes off screen,
but
that must have happened.
But we basically saw them, anytime they were together, we saw them.
I mean, she did pass out for a little while, so we could make it even worse by saying it happened then.
He did put her on a boat. Maybe they fucked in the boat.
Well, so she passed out shortly after Music of the Night, because his music is so powerful. It knocked her out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to sort of the next day when he's jacking off at his organ.
Da, 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 da.
So maybe during that nap? The nap is really the only time I can think of. But anyway, when it happened, we don't really need to linger on. Just that it's clear that there was like, oh, this was some, like, mutual thing that didn't work out? Like, he left her, and then she got with someone else, and it wasn't that he kidnapped her, and she was horrified, and then she fled, and then later he tried to mesmerize her, and in a moment of grace, she's like, oh, you're a horrible person, but your life probably sucked, so I take pity on you. Here's a kiss.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
This is a movie with a lot of sympathy for rapists.
Oh, for sure. Kidnapping, raping, murdering. He does that too. And just sort of general terrorism, extortion, all of it. But he is. But the thing is, Matthew, he's very good at music. He's a very good composer.
Is he?
Well.
Is he?
Well.
Because his, like, masterpiece seems to be like, we're just bathing beauties, are we?
Well, that's in the second one, yes. In the first one, okay.
So we get that. There's Don Juan Triumph in the first one.
Juan, which is a song about how a man tricks a woman into sex.
As they do, like as all heroes do.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and this one does have, there's an okay song in Love Never Dies. That's the title of the titular song.
Oh, it's so slow.
But here's the problem.
Deadly slow.
There's like four good notes in that song.
And then it just repeats and repeats and repeats.
So you got the love never dies.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da.
It's a mix.
And that's all I can remember from that.
Yeah, it's a mix of Wishing You Were Somehow Here Again and Memory, but slowed down and stripped down to just like a couple of phrases repeated endlessly.
We also, I think there's something good about the Coney Island song.
There's a couple.
Coney Isle, da 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 da.
Yeah, there's a couple. Like it's
da 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 da. I don't remember anything.
Yeah,
like there's a few little fragments. It's like something Andrew Lloyd Webber kind of hummed in his sleep. And
sure, well, he is the angel of music, and there is the thing with the Phantom is that he is a great composer, and so we have to forgive everything else. Madame Giry makes this very clear that Christine was the villain for spurning the Phantom.
Okay, here's,
because he is a genius, and if she had only appreciated and accepted his genius the way Madame Giry and I guess her daughter Meg been trying to impress him for years. If only Christine had done that, she would have benefited from his genius and not broken his heart.
There's a whole side thing with Madame Giry and Meg Giry, who
are the villains as well. Women are villains.
Yeah.
The Phantom is the misunderstood genius. All the women who didn't get him are villains, and handsome men might be handsome, but they aren't geniuses.
I would not say that that women come off well in this work.
I mean, nobody comes off well, but we are meant to sympathize with the Phantom. There's also this, like, spooky kid who has three notes to sing, and boy, does he sing them over and over and over again.
Mm.
And I felt so bad for the fact that this show calls for an actual human child.
Mm.
Like, just get a Cabbage Patch doll or something, because so much of it is just the adults, like, a few inches from his face, belting, and he has to just stare there, like, stand there staring, unblinking.
I will also say, the moment he is introduced, the scene that he's introduced is like, hello, and here is our child. Go, isn't the ocean pretty? And the kid is like, yes, but remember, I cannot swim.
Right.
And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is he going to drown? Is there going to be, like, a drowning moment for him.
Sure.
So no spoilers, but this is not a show that will surprise you pleasantly. I'll put it that way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the end is not necessarily surprising, but it is wild. Especially...
My jaw was actually dropped.
So the thing is, if you don't know, and you don't need to, the original Christine
yeah.
was played by a woman that the true angel of music, Andrew Lloyd Webber, married.
Yes. So Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote this musical and then married the lead.
Right. And it's a musical about a man who writes a musical for a woman to ensnare her in his genius mesmers of music.
Mm.
So he married his lead from Phantom.
Yes.
And then she left him. And then,
well, I mean, we...
Well, They parted ways. They yeah. parted ways. And then, like, 20 years later, he writes a musical where, boy, does she get her comeuppance
yeah.
for leaving the Phantom.
Her and whoever she left him for.
Yeah. So, if you imagine
and
Sarah
like her
Brightman...
Friend.
And her friend. If you imagine Sarah Brightman playing the role of Christine in Love Never Dies, it really goes to a ghoulish, ghoulish place.
It's... a manifesto, an unpleasant manifesto.
Emphasis on the man.
Mm,
it
yeah.
is indeed. Christine is severely punished. Severely punished.
And this is why I will say it is the worst musical I've ever seen. Not just because it's not catchy, it's not fun, it's mm-hmm. boring.
Yeah.
There's a story that the story doesn't make sense. The characters don't behave like human beings.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of the text of the play, there's an additional layer of horribleness.
There is, and, you know, we're reading into it some of this, but I think some of it's pretty on the surface.
And it cheapens the original Phantom.
It does. Now, see, the thing is, I don't care, because the original Phantom still, it's a flawed show.
Yes, yes.
But it's
I'm
fun.
I'm not precious about Phantom.
It's
but
fun.
It's and fun, and I hate that this takes something yeah. that's fun and is like, it just dirties it.
It's fun, it's catchy, it moves. When you are seeing it live, it is such an assault from, and not in like in Love Never Dies, where there are other kinds of assault.
Yeah.
It is such an assault on your senses, and you are so impressed if it's a good production.
Yeah.
Like, whoever the actress playing Christine is working so hard from the beginning of that show to the end, and if she's got the pipes to pull it off, and the Phantom, you are... amazed by these singers because they are doing hard stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's just the, you know, the production design spectacle of the costumes and the, if you've got the sets where the grand staircase is there and the falling chandelier, all that shit is wild and impressive, and the songs are catchy, and the whole thing just bounces along. You get swept up in the melodrama that is just moment to moment, tonally shifting wildly. It's taking you on this ride. And Love Never Dies is kind of like when a ride in Disneyland breaks down and you just keep hearing like the voice on the speaker telling you like, oh, eventually we're going to get started.
Don't get out of your seat.
Yeah, don't get out of your seat. You have to sit here.
It really feels like an endurance challenge.
Yeah, yeah. There's not a memorable song in it. Love Never Dies is fine. The
it's
title
just fine,
song.
Though. The
it's
other
just
problem
fine.
Is like the lyricist wrote like 30% of a song and then looped less.
Mm.
Less. Like,
and I get that the move from the opera house to Coney Island means it's not going to be as operatic, but it's also not very authentic to its own time. It's just kind of a nothing. Like,
yeah.
Like the first one, the songs are so impressive because often like they become arias by mm-hmm. the end. And okay, so it's not the opera. You're not going to do that. That's fine. But if you've got an actress who can sing the Christine part.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, please give her... If you've got someone who can sing the Phantom part, give them something to sing, my angel of music.
Yeah. So it's a real bummer, but it's available to watch on YouTube for another couple of days, I guess.
Now, Cats is very good.
Cats is very good. Evita is fine.
I haven't seen the movie since.
JC Superstar, pretty good.
You know, the movie of JC Superstar is very, very dated.
Yes.
However...
Yes.
However... I do think it's a fun watch.
I think the version with, Chrissy Teigen's husband?
I have no idea.
So
who is Chrissy Teigen?
She's I don't know, she's a writer, internet person. She
oh.
she wrote a cookbook and she's
okay.
popular on Twitter.
So the cookbook's husband.
The cookbook's husband
yes.
is John Legend, that's his name.
Okay, I don't know who he is.
He was in a production, one of those like JC Superstar Live
oh,
things on okay. NBC or one of those.
Yes.
And that's pretty good.
Okay.
I think we watched parts of that. It's the one that's just like all scaffolding.
Well, that's many of them, but...
Well, that's true.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Jesus Christ Superstar is a show that moves as well. It moves, moves, moves. I think that's one of the things that separates those early Andrew Lloyd Webber shows that aren't, compared to some of the best musicals, a lot of these, they're not great, but they move and they overwhelm you, and they are often impressive in one way or another.
I don't know anything about Starlight Express.
Now, that sounds like it ought to be impressive, but it doesn't seem like it quite landed.
It is. What is it? It's the has the most... injuries of any show ever on Broadway?
Well, for the benefit of those who are not theater bugs, what do you call someone who goes to the theater a lot?
Theater bug, sure. Why not?
For the benefit of those who are not theater bugs, Matthew, what is Starlight Express?
It's cats, but they're trains.
And how do they communicate to the audience that these are trains?
They're dressed as trains with roller skates.
They have roller skates. It is a roller skated musical.
Yeah. So, tremendous number of injuries in this show. Was apparently a huge flop, and I don't know if that's because it was bad or because it was just, you know, expensive insurance payouts or what, but I've never seen any of it. What are other Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals?
There's Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Sure, okay, any day will do.
Which is any
dream will do, any day will do, sure, why not?
Which I think is an inferior Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yes, yes. I mean, speaking of sequels, which one came first?
Joseph, I think.
Huh.
I think. I'm not entirely sure about
that. Which musical? Not who came first in the Bible?
No, I understand. That I can tell you. That was indeed Joseph.
Okay.
Matthew.
So, did he do Les Mis? That was somebody else,
no,
wasn't it?
Yeah, okay. No,
I'm just thinking
no,
spectacles.
No, he did. He did Joseph. He did Jesus Christ Superstar. He did Evita. He did Starlight Express. He did Cats. He did...
Whistle Down the Wind.
He did, well, that came later. He did Phantom. He did Whistle Down the Wind. He did Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, Sunset Boulevard, yeah.
Which is where they start to get boring.
Mm.
And then after that, he did a whole bunch of reality TV judging appearances.
Is Sunset Boulevard his Follies?
Maybe.
Like, I think, or I guess another way to put that is Follies is a better Sunset Boulevard. Obviously, Follies came first.
I would like to understand the comparison you're making.
Faded theater people.
Oh.
Processing regrets.
I think you're maybe being a little too generous to Lord Andy because I think what he does is he takes movies or other stories that already exist and turns them into musical spectacles.
Yeah.
Instead of it, I don't know that it's necessarily a story about fading and regrets so much as it is, this movie's neat. I think it would make a good musical.
Has he ever written a musical based on something original?
Whistle Down the... No, that was based on a movie and a book. Starlight Express, I don't know. Starlight Express, maybe. I mean, I can't fault anyone for adaptation. One of my favorite musicals, of course, is Little Shop of Horrors, which is itself an adaptation, Matthew.
It is.
And then the version of it that's for children, Little Mermaid, is also an adaptation.
I'm just looking at... Oh, School of Rock. Apparently he worked on School of Rock.
Okay.
And, this can't be right.
Mm-hmm.
The Wizard of Oz, 2011, I don't think that's correct.
Oh, no, he did write some songs for a stage version of Wizard of Oz.
And this looks fascinating. By Jeeves, a musical by...
Ask Jeeves?
It is.
Is it?
Yes.
Wait, Ask Jeeves?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Not Ask Jeeves.
Oh. Because I was going to say, like, what a way to cash in on the new millennium, Matthew, and web search.
No, it's about Jeeves and Worcester.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think that could be good. Here's the thing, is P.G. Woodhouse was himself a lyricist. Maybe I'm confusing him with somebody else.
Well, he worked with Cole Porter.
Oh, that's what I'm
thinking. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I don't know that Andrew Lloyd Webber compares favorably to Cole Porter. I guess in some respects.
In some respects.
In some respects.
I think Andrew Lloyd Webber's spectacles are more spectacular.
Yeah. But in terms of, like, lyricism, I can't think of any song from an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical that is better than Anything Goes. Anything Goes has such clever writing, and maybe that's P.G. Woodhouse. Woodhouse?
Woodhouse.
Woodhouse.
Yes. It doesn't look like it's pronounced
Wadayada.
Here's what I'll say. Those books, the P.G. Woodhouse books, don't age well.
Oh, I bet they don't.
Yeah.
I bet they don't. They're written from not only in a certain time, but from a certain class perspective.
Yes.
Yes.
So,
okay.
Where the show, the series, the TV series from the, I want to say, early 80s?
Sure, with Fry and Laurie.
Yes, with Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie. I think that ages well. It still feels very, like, dated period piece. Like,
yeah.
It feels very 20s by way of the 80s.
The Fun Minstrel Show episode is a little rough.
Is there a minstrel show?
There's a blackface episode.
Oh, dear.
I think Hugh Laurie does full blackface in it. I don't think Stephen Fry approves, either in character or in real life, but I believe there's a full blackface episode.
Well, I don't care for that. I was going to say, the show seems to recognize the absurdity. It seems to be operating from outside of the filter in which P.G. Woodhouse wrote it. That having been said, it is a bit of a satire of people of a certain station.
It is.
And you know, obviously, P.G. Woodhouse recognized that. But I think the show does a better job of positioning the viewer. I think the show has, the TV show has a better perspective than the books.
Oh, my God. Well, it has a more modern perspective, yes. Certainly. One that perhaps, yes, I do think that the books are meant to lampoon the people that were essentially his peers. But now with some distance, I think that they could be even further lampooned.
Yeah, I think the books are written first person from Worcester's point of view,
yeah.
From Bertie Worcester's point of view. And I think that obfuscates, maybe it's because I'm reading it from such a remove, from 100 years later.
Yeah.
I felt as though the first person narrator in the Jeeves and Wooster books,
yeah.
Which are these books from 100 years ago about right. Like high society British people just before World War One, I think. Mm-hmm. No, just before World War, after World War One,
but before World War Two.
Yes.
Yes.
So I think the books are more sympathetic to that class than
well, Bertie would be, though,
yeah.
And it's a first-person story. Now, do the books successfully communicate that Bertie's an idiot?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
He is
so
an idiot.
Even in his
yes.
First-person narration, it's successfully written yeah. to communicate to the reader that this person is an idiot but doesn't realize
you
he's
clearly
an idiot.
Have an unreliable narrator, yes.
Okay.
But it's all in good fun.
Well, sure.
And the shows are, you know, the shows are a great comedy, too.
Sure. I mean, the same way, what is it, A Confederacy of Dunces. Mm. I can't remember. That's not first person, but it's very close no. to Ignatius. Like, it's a very close third person,
yes.
right?
Here's what I'll say, is the books portray Bertie as an idiot.
Yeah.
With other people around him who are just eccentric.
Uh-huh.
And I think the TV show makes it clear that rich people are dumb.
Well, with the TV show, I think our POV character is definitely Jeeves.
That's true.
So it's not that we're living in Bertie's head. We're
yes.
seeing Bertie mm-hmm. through Stephen Fry's eyes.
Yes, that is correct.
So I think we're very much positioned with the person who sees him as an idiot, but yeah. whose job it is to hide his idiocy from others and from himself.
Yes. Yes. And Jeeves is the hero of the show in a way that is not immediately apparent from the books.
Mm.
He's
the penny to
yes.
Bertie's Inspector Gadget. He is
yes.
the brain to his penny, to
yes.
his gadget.
Well, that's getting complicated
Matthew.
Because Brain is a different character. But
Brain and Brain keeps Penny on the straight and narrow. Otherwise, she'd be...
Brain's more like the muscle of the group,
isn't
he?
He's the muscle, Matthew. He's her enforcer.
I think...
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never seen anyone who's adopted Brain or a Brain-like character as a fursona.
Why
but
not?
But he seems ripe for it.
He's ripe, all right, Matthew. He stinks.
Mm.
And I'll tell you what,
yeah.
Matthew, that's my fursona.
Brain?
Yes, and you are the penny. I'm going to give you some pigtails.
And I've got a computer book?
You communicate with my caller to command me.
Yep.
Is this erotic?
It's becoming
Matthew,
that.
You wear a little wig and you have your computer book
mm-hmm.
and you tap in commands and my collar goes,
yep.
and I go, R-r-r-r-r-r-r-r, and I become a dog when I don't want to.
Now, sometimes
yeah.
the collar had a little camera on it.
It did.
Sometimes it didn't.
Well, that's modern technology. That's from Apple Computer.
Mm. Anyway, not to just complain about things. There's
oh.
a thing that we've started watching that we do like.
I don't know what it is.
We've started watching Moulin Rouge.
Moulin Rouge is good.
Great.
Moulin
a great
Rouge
time.
Is good. We watched something. I feel like because we skipped a week, and I feel like in the interim we watched something good. It wasn't Beastars. We already went over the Beastars, Matthew. What was it?
Oh.
Wasn't there something good?
Well, we started watching The Magnificent Seven, and we were like,
man,
this is all
right. We watched The Good,
right.
the Bad, and the Ugly. That was good.
The Good, Bad, and the Ugly. That was pretty
And then
good.
We watched Once Upon a Time in the Mama. Once Upon a Time in the West. Now, that wasn't as good, but it was still good.
I do feel as though, was it on an Amazon or a Netflix that we watched something that...
It was on a Netflix, I think. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know, Matthew. We watched something. So The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly was good.
Mm-hmm.
And Once Upon a Time in the West was not as good, but it was still good. I didn't care for The Magnificent Seven.
No, so especially, you know,
it doesn't compare favorably to a Sergio Leone.
Yeah. So that is certainly a problem. Those movies are so beautiful.
They are stunning.
And The Magnificent Seven just feels like somebody plopped down a camera wherever it fit.
It feels very ordinary in comparison.
I would agree with that, yeah. Yeah, and like there was just nothing.
We watched The Lady Vanishes. Now that's a good movie.
That was great.
That's a good movie.
Now, that's an Alfred Hitchcock film from the 30s, 38.
Yeah.
Some really good jokes in that one.
Mm-hmm.
And also great suspense and great characters.
Yeah, it's one of his earlier movies. It's a little shaggy. It's a little raggedy. I would say it doesn't have quite the punch at the end or the polish throughout, and yet all the elements are there.
Yeah, that's one that I think could have been remade very successfully, like in his like beautiful 50s, 60s period.
Sure.
Like he did The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Indeed. But I think it's also a movie that's very much of its time.
Yes, yes. Well, that's it could only be made, I think. It could only be set in 1938.
I mean, I think it loses. I think there is some subtext that's not too subtle, particularly toward the end. About the role, particularly of England in the world in 1938, that is struck through the entire movie.
There's a lot of, well, they can't hurt us, we're British.
There's that, and there's a lot of, we don't want to get involved. The whole movie really hinges around, there is some...
Mustn't cause a fuss.
Yeah, there's some nefarious international stuff happening, and all the British people on a train don't want to get involved. And at the end, like, literally a guy comes out waving a white flag being like, you know, oh, don't hurt us, we'll cooperate and everything will be fine.
Yes, we're above all this petty squabble, this continental squabble.
Well, he just doesn't want to, you know, he has various reasons for just, like, not, it comes down to very petty stuff, whether it's either sports or sex or money, basically, are the reasons why they don't, like, they just don't want their daily routine interrupted.
Yes.
Even though they recognize that something important might be going on, they don't want to inconvenience themselves or be embarrassed.
Yeah, now that you know, the more we talk about this, the more I'm like, no, this could be, there are a lot of times that this could be set.
Oh, for sure. But
it feels right for 38, but I think you could adapt it for a lot of other circumstances.
I think so, but I think that in Alfred Hitchcock's lifetime...
Yeah.
It would be weird to remake that just in, like, the middle of the 50s.
I guess it could be about the Cold War, but it just wouldn't be the same.
It's not the Cold War's got different tensions, and I think a lot of his movies of the 50s explore those tensions.
I don't think he ever did anything about, like, Russia or that kind of thing.
Oh, sure he did. Yeah, there's all kinds of Cold War stuff. Isn't North by Northwest
I think it's unspecified.
Well, fair enough, but in the same way, in The Lady Vanishes, it's not.
That's
it's not
true.
Literally
we never really
Germany.
Say Germany, yeah.
In fact, I think it's a made-up country. At least they're staying in a made-up country at the beginning.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, no, it's not explicitly about Russia, but there are a bunch of Cold War movies that
he
made. I
guess that's true. I just tend to think of his stories as being very personal and less frequently about big intrigue.
Well, I think that the big intrigue is explored through the effects that it has on the characters. These things are backdrop. They're not front and center. He's very concerned with getting getting the characters into tense situations.
Yes.
And these externalities are not what the movie is about. They're just the things that are setting the scene.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. I'm just, you know, I'm thinking of, like, Rope and Psycho and, you know.
Well, I mean, he's the director, I think, who came up with codifying the idea of the MacGuffin, the thing that ostensibly the movie's about, but it's just an excuse to put the characters into tense situations.
Sure. Yeah, so I guess where we're coming down is that Hitchcock is good.
Well, you know, let's be clear. He might have been a bit of a scoundrel.
Let's say his work.
His work
is good.
Up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
It holds up, Matthew, if you want to be entertained.
Mm.
Now, if you're a blonde lady, you probably don't want to go to his trailer at night and hear boom, 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 boom.
Very unfortunate.
Boom,
boom. Yeah, we were having a conversation earlier about people who created work that we admire, but the people, we just don't want to talk about the people who made them.
Yeah, that the work is good.
Yeah.
But the people are problematic. And this is been talked about in many forums, Matthew. It's a sticky wicket, and I think people have to figure out how they're going to approach it.
Yeah, so we do have, speaking of problematic people with great works, we have some comments from listeners.
Oh, the greatest of people.
We have a comment from Mark. Regarding Cats.
Cats.
Mark says, I finally watched Cats and was thoroughly entertained.
Uh-huh.
I hope to see this in a full theater with an appreciative audience someday.
Yes.
Actually, I hope to see anything in a full theater again.
Well, that ain't that the truth.
Yes.
At least in Los Angeles, I think that is a thing you can have. Now, hopefully that catches on. And Toronto, at least, has done it once. Hopefully it catches on and becomes a thing, because I'd love to see it in a theater again.
Me too.
I'm in no way being facetious when I say that it was probably the best movie-going experience I've ever had. I had to think for a moment, is it ever? I think in terms of going to a movie theater and experiencing a movie with a live audience who has not seen it before, it was the best experience I've ever had.
Yeah, I think that's true. And we saw a Star Wars in the theater with George Lucas.
I've seen multiple. I sat in front of him for Borat, and that was awkward because I didn't know what parts I should be laughing at.
Well, I saw Book of Mormon with Cleve Jones.
Well, there you go.
Awkward. Isn't it funny that Andrew Lloyd Webber is involved with both the worst movie, or sorry, the worst musical we've ever seen, and the best movie we've ever seen?
Well, I don't know that it's the best movie we've ever seen.
The best movie-going experience we've ever had.
The best live motion picture theater-going experience I've had.
Speaking of motion pictures,
yes.
DK comments.
DK, Donkey Kong, we've had this conversation.
I too felt deeply piqued yet perturbed by the many horny sensual moments involving the thick older brother and the handsome bottom half daddy on Onward.
Oh, Onward's a real weirdly horny movie.
How could the creators of Onward not notice this, DK writes. It's like we gays are seeing the truths of a dimension the straights are a part of but not aware of, if that makes sense.
Well, it's like how the bumblebee can see ultraviolet and that they can communicate by dance, which gays can do as well, Matthew.
We have that, but with butts.
We pee on each other and we can see the ultraviolet reflection. And we can see the stink lines rising from the butt. And that's how we know that that butt needs to go clean out, Matthew. This is how it is. Now, DK couldn't be more correct about the horniness of Onward and its peculiar... its peculiarities.
Yes. I think one of the weirdest parts to me is that around the beginning of the movie, our main hero character, our Blue Linguini.
Our Blue Linguini.
Is at like a fast food restaurant. He's like, White Castle, let's say. Because that's the kind of joke this movie makes.
Oh, because of a castle. Sure.
Yeah. So he's at like some fast food restaurant and he meets some stranger who knew his dad.
Yes.
And the way that the strangers talk about his dad seems like, oh, they fucked.
They might have.
It just seems like he met his dad's ex-boyfriend.
Sure. Well, you know, dad got around, Matthew.
Apparently. Now, he got around ass.
How is it? He certainly does. How is it that those boys went on that whole trip and didn't even take a peek at Daddy Dick? Wouldn't they want to know?
What? Now I'm starting to think about the rules of the world.
Yeah.
What would happen if they unzipped the fly?
Well, so if you look down from the top, it's nothing. However,
it's just empty pants.
But I feel like if you rolled up the pants, there'd be legs underneath.
There's definitely socks underneath.
And if there's socks and legs, then there must be a dick.
Yep.
Matthew. Now,
also, I'm sure this conversation happened.
That movie, Matthew, I didn't care for it. We got to the end, I didn't care for it. However, I've seen a lot of people on internet say that they were crying through the whole thing.
If it is something that has if you have valence around parental relationships and loss.
I think if you have dead dad issues, or even if you just have distant dad issues or distant dead dad issues, I think that it could hit a certain nerve, or if you have brother issues.
Okay, I'm willing to see that.
It did nothing for me. It did nothing at all. However, maybe dead distant dad or... love me brother.
That's fair.
But didn't hit me that way, but maybe.
We have a comment from Billy.
Billy, hello.
Who says, please tell me you've watched Tyra's interview with Lily Singh.
Who is Lily Singh?
She's a talk show host.
Oh my.
It's up on YouTube, and apparently when Lily said that Merriam-Webster Dictionary does not recognize smize as a word, Tyra gave a speech to go out to Miss Merriam-Webster to get this addressed.
Miss Merriam-Webster, I love it.
So, I've watched this clip.
Yeah.
I think Tyra knows that It is not a dictionary written by a person named Merriam-Webster.
Oh, sure. Tyra does bits sometimes.
But...
And yeah.
In character. Yes. In the character of Tyra, much yes. as Charo has the character of Charo.
Absolutely.
She 100% believes she is talking to a specific person named Miss Merriam-Webster. Mm.
Well, we watched that video not that long ago where she tried, like, expensive things and cheap things and
oh, God.
Pick which was which.
Yes.
And she definitely slips into the character of Tyra. Like, you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she does bits. Nevertheless, that sounds amazing.
It's very good. It's very, very, very good. She goes on a frothing rant to the camera.
Mm.
And I don't love this. So I don't know that much about Lily Singh, but Lily Singh is trying to adopt a tone to match Tyra's. And I think that Tyra works best with a straight man.
Oh, definitely. So, I don't know who Lily Singh is.
Mm. Anyway, so there's that. I do recommend that video.
I will have to look at it.
The Udder.
Udder.
Joanne writes.
Yes. Oh, please tell me.
Is called a bag.
Okay, and so am I.
So you'll recall that we had a conversation about Bag Bomb.
Oh, yeah. That's your nickname.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So Joanne says the udder is called a bag.
Yes.
For some reason, calling it a bag makes me really uncomfortable.
Well?
I don't see a problem with being uncomfortable about that. That makes me uncomfortable, too.
Oh, my.
It's almost exclusively called a bag in horses.
Wait.
What?
Horses have udders?
Well, I don't think they have udders like cows.
Joanne, you've been holding out on us. Horses have udders?
Well, I mean, they certainly have nipples.
They have a bag. Now, wait a minute, though. Matthew, my world's flipped turning upside down. Does that mean humans have bags? Does that mean that a human woman on all fours has a bag? Also, I'm having deja vu if we had this conversation before.
If we
flip a woman over like a table and have her walk on all fours, does she have bags?
So allow me to continue.
Yes, please.
When mares are close to delivery,
mares, a horse.
Yes.
When Monsieur, not the mare of Halifax.
No.
Oh.
When Monsieur Le Mares are close to delivery,
yeah,
their udder starts to fill up, which is called bagging up.
Bagging up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. This is a horse. Horses bag up?
Joanne adds, gross.
Yeah.
My mare loves to have her udder scratched. It's one of the few things I can offer that she likes.
Wowie, wow, wow.
Now, I don't know, James, if you are interested in this sort of thing.
No.
But I have obtained images of a horse udder.
What? This is blowing my mind. These are just... This is... not safe for work content. Oh my goodness.
They do look surprisingly human.
They do.
It does look a bit like a lovely lady's, oh dear, chest on the bottom half of a horse.
Joanne, you've changed my life.
Yes.
What? I never thought a horse was capable of this.
I can't believe we've gone this far in life without knowing.
Backing up.
Bagging up.
Well, well, well. Wow.
James, you have a look in your eyes like you're reading Penthouse Forum.
You won't believe me. This has never happened to me before, but...
Uh-huh.
I was going through the barn one night. Oh, my God. Out of the bar and into the barn. This is incredible. Well, do the furries know about this?
Jesus, do they?
Oh, okay. So you were well aware.
I mean, I haven't
you knew
seen
about
them,
bagging up.
I've seen them on. So I've seen like caribou.
What?
So other ungulates,
yeah,
that furries have adopted as their own.
Okay.
I've seen art that emphasizes that body part.
The bag.
The bag.
The bag.
Surprisingly, not on horses, but on other, you know, hooved creatures.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like a satyr.
Yeah.
Like Mr. Tumnus.
Let's say that.
Have you seen Mr. Tumnus's bag?
Now, satyrs are supposed to have a lot of junk out front.
Oh, they've got the dick, but yes. Do they have the bag?
Do they have... I don't know.
Matthew, do satyrs bag up?
Probably.
Oh, my goodness. They bag up and fag out. That's Matthew, that's going to be our new nightlife party. Bag up and fag out.
What communicates the theme? Do you have like sheep? Do you have actual sheep there?
Or? You have actual sheep. Mm-hmm. You have full Tumnus cosplay.
Uh huh.
With big false breasts.
Uh huh.
Matthew, and a big now, rubber dick.
I do like a satyr.
There you go.
I like a satyr man.
A chesty satyr.
Uh huh.
With like a drag queen breastplate.
Good,
Matthew.
Yep. Good. What? Mm-hmm.
They're riding sheep. Yep. So they're very. We find short men like that Bravo Delta and his little friend.
Okay.
Matthew, we dress them up with drag queen breastplates and
sure
big rubber dicks. With him, you don't even need a rubber one. You just flop it out through the fly.
Very
there you
convenient.
Go. Absolutely. Matthew, we cut off his feet and we put little plastic caps at the bottom so he can have hooves.
Oh, my.
And then we can sell his feet on eBay.
Oh, no, well,
you know somebody wants those feet.
Somebody
Matthew.
Does want those feet.
We describe them as face feet. You can attach them to your face.
Oh, Jesus.
Matthew, permanently for a permanent eroticism. And then we glue some horns to his eyes and send him out on a sheep into the middle of the dance floor. And then we play, isn't it ironic? Don't you think? And we play that song and he has to dance to It's Like Rain on My Wedding Day.
So here's some yes. furry art that oh. I have come across in my travels.
Well, these are just... Wait a minute. Are they bagged up or are those testy clays?
No, they're bagged up. Well, I don't know.
But
if
wait,
they're...
these are. But they have boy horns.
Yes.
Oh, that's the fun of it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So
I see. I don't mean to misgender the deer, Matthew. I just those horns. I thought perhaps that they wouldn't have bags, but that doesn't mean they don't have bags.
It's a flight of fancy.
It absolutely is, Matthew. Mm. We can enjoy.
We can. We can if we want to.
We can dance if we want to.
We can make that a part of... What were you calling it? Fag out, bag up?
That's the one.
Anyway, yeah. So that's our artistic contribution to the world.
The art keeps flowing, and so does the mulk.
Yeah.
Matthew.
What else is keeping us busy these days, Jay? Oh, well, I've been playing a lot of Dragon Quest Builders, too.
You built a thing.
Yeah, so Dragon Quest Builders 2, I've become obsessed with.
Oh.
It is basically The Sims plus Minecraft plus Animal Crossing.
Well, plus Dragon Quest.
Well, plus Dragon Quest, sure.
Yes.
I guess. I have less experience with Dragon Quest, so I don't really know it that well, but it's a very fun time. You build a little town, you're crafting things out of blocks of materials, and you make a little town for your little doll people to run around in and... you can make a workout room for them to lift weights.
Oh, my goodness. You found a bag that speaks Polari.
I did.
Speaking of bags.
This was incredible. So if you're not familiar, Polari is a British gay theater slang of the early 1900s. And these Dragon Quest games are known for having... they're localized in England with very English patois.
They are. Now, I do... you may think I've never heard Polari, but you have. If you've ever said zhuzh,
mm-hmm.
you're speaking... Polari. What other? Naff. We don't really say that here, but naff does actually get said.
It does.
In the UK.
It does. There's not a lot of words that are in current usage.
Wah, 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 zhuzh, for There's, sure.
That's kind of like the big one.
yeah,
a lot of others just are not like, I don't know, Raya for hair.
I've never heard that.
I don't know. I'm trying to forget that. Like, when I hear it spoken, I can kind of follow along, but it's hard for me to summon any up out of my imagination. So anyway, it was invented to basically evade detection for queer people to communicate with each other without other people following along their conversation.
It is a cant.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of it's derived from either Romani dialect or Italian or French. It's all like a mishmash of all these things. A little bit of Yiddish thrown in there as well. Oh, good. Interesting. Mm-hmm. It can be traced back possibly as far as the 16th century.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a debate about its origins.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see. Terminology. Do we have blah, blah, blah. References. Entry to mainstream. Glossary. Here we go. So we've got... yeah, so you can really see the Italian influence here. So for numbers, you've got una for one, due for two, tre for three, quarter for four, and so on. What else do we have? We've got BB for bisexual.
Oh, my goodness. BB Newworth.
Yep. Ajax means next to or adjacent to.
Okay.
We've got arva, meaning to have sex.
Oh.
From the Italian sciavare, to arva. Screw.
Oh.
Aunt Nell's are ears. Aunt Nellie Fake's are earrings.
Mm-hmm.
A Barney's a fight. Bevy is a drink. I mean, you can kind of follow that along.
A beverage, sure.
Bijou means little.
Mm.
Bold means homosexual.
Oh.
That's kind of fun. He's bold.
Mm.
Butch means masculine. Bouvari
well, we use that today.
I guess we do. Cackle means to gossip.
Yeah.
Let's see. Capello means hat from Italian. It's just like Italian for hat.
Mm-hmm.
A car seat is a toilet.
A car seat?
Car seat.
Oh.
Car seat.
Hmm.
A carts is a penis from Italian cazzo.
Oh.
Charper means to look for something. Charpering Omi means a policeman.
Oh.
I think Omi means man.
Oh.
Let's see. Cory Bungus is the backside.
Oh, the
That's
old
a great
Bungus.
One. The great Cory Bungus.
Mm.
Cottaging, of course.
Well, that still gets used.
That's a bit. A
Not
bit.
Here so yeah. much, but it does get used.
Dolly is nice and pretty.
Mm-hmm. Hello, Dolly.
Ecaf means face. It's just face backwards.
Oh.
Eek is your face.
Mm.
Your Dolly old eek is your face. Jesus. Trousers.
Mm.
Farting crackers.
It's harder to say.
Why? I feel like that really gets in the way of... I need a citation for that one, I think. That one feels like maybe it was added to Wikipedia as a joke.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's see. Flowery means where you live. Fogus is tobacco. A funt is a pound. That's from Yiddish.
Oh.
A hoofer is a dancer. A homie Poloni is an effeminate gay man.
Now, hoofer still gets used.
I guess it does, yeah. Let's see. Jubes is breasts.
Oh, my goodness. The bag.
Jubs.
Oh.
I guess, is that close to jugs for
it
breasts?
It is close to jugs.
I wonder if there's a relationship there.
Mm.
Let's see. Lollies is legs. Lolly tappers is feet.
Oh.
Lils is hands.
Mm-hmm.
And Lily is police, like Lily Law. I feel like that's something that I hear now and then.
Lily Law.
Mankey is something worthless. Martinis is hands. A lot of words for hands here.
Mm.
Meshuggah.
Yes.
It means just what it means in Yiddish.
Sure. Mankey, I think, still gets used.
Mankey?
I think so.
Like for a monkey?
No.
Really? Mankey? For worthless or dirty?
Yeah.
From Italian mancare?
I've heard mankey.
Hmm. Mankey. Okay. Mankey panky.
Well, not like that.
What do we've got? National handbag for government financial assistance.
Oh, my goodness.
That's pretty good. Ogles are eyes and ogle fakes are glasses.
Mm.
Onk is a nose. Orderly daughters is police.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of fun. Let's see. An oven means a mouth. Nanty pots in the oven means no teeth in the mouth.
Oh, dear.
That's kind of fun. Poloni means a woman. Quongs is testicles.
Mm-hmm.
Zhuzher means someone a hairstylist. Scrieve means to write from Irish scribo. I have no idea how to pronounce that. It's a lot of accent marks. Shiker is a wig, mutation of Yiddish Scheidel. And so, S-O, means to be homosexual. Is he so?
Oh.
So, anyway, that's what you get in Polari. And there's a character in this Dragon Quest game, which just came out like a year ago, who speaks Polari.
Oh, my
unexpected,
goodness.
Unexpected queer character in a video game.
It's a bag of jewels.
Oh, well, that's the other fun thing, is it's a bag of jewels, who goes by the name Jewels. Reference almost certainly to Julian and Sandy, who were two characters who spoke Polari on the British radio around the middle of the century.
They're surely dead.
Well, yes.
Mm, they didn't make it.
Under difficult circumstances, I'm afraid.
Oh, my.
Kenneth Williams.
Kenneth Williams. Wait, he was a Julian and Sandy?
He was. I can't remember if he was Julian or Sandy, but he was
he
one
was
of them.
He was one of them.
He was. He was so.
Oh, so...
Yes. In a lot of the Carry On films as well.
Carry On. Carry On
Up
and...
Was he in Up Pompeii? That might have been one of the other.
I like Up Pompeii. It's stupid.
It is very stupid.
Yes.
One of those dumb British movies of very obvious jokes. And a lot of mugging to the camera going like, ooh!
Yes. I do. I like that.
That Matthew. Joke.
I like There's, that.
I wish. I, what was his name? It wasn't Kenneth Williams. It was one of the other ones who had a very gay performer whose catchphrase was "Shut that door."
Oh yes, it was not Kenneth Williams. It was one of the other ones, I think.
What was who's? Who?
I don't know.
Let's see. Larry Grayson.
Oh my God! He shut that door.
He would tell a joke, people would laugh, and then he'd get a rolling laugh by looking off stage and going, "Shut that door."
That's right, because his mother didn't like a draft, I think.
Oh, was that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
He had a lot of mother jokes.
Sure.
I saw Bernadette Peters was trending, and I was worried, Matthew, but she's still with us.
Okay, good. Why is she trending? Just because she's great?
It was a star-studded lineup.
Oh, for what?
Stephen Sondheim's 90th birthday.
Wow.
Matthew.
Okay, now there's... To bring this back to our complaints about Love Never Dies, one of my issues with that show is it seems to be trying to do Sondheim lyrics every now and then.
Every now and then.
It's a bad fit.
It doesn't work, no.
There's like little bits where someone's like, I'll have a drink, sir. What do you think, sir? And it's like, okay, that sounds like it's like...
Almost, yeah.
Something he crumpled up and threw, like Sondheim, crumpled up and threw away when he was writing Merrily We Roll Along.
Yeah.
But it's in like the sing-through Andrew Lloyd Webber show.
Well, I mean, I don't think the sung-throughiness of it is the problem per se. It's more just that it's not executed particularly. Like, the music doesn't support that style.
Well, yeah, they don't actually have any good songs to sing through it. So they're singing. They sure are singing.
Oh, my goodness. What a meow.
The claws are out.
The claws are, what color are they today? Maybe?
Jungle red. Has there ever been a musical of the women?
That started
as a play.
It was called Bags Akimbo.
Great.
Matthew. It everyone was Jungle Red.
What was it, just women exclamation point? No, women, am I right?
Oh, my
goodness.
That's
the name of the show?
Oh, my goodness. What would that show be?
It would be the women, but from the point of view of all the men.
Oh, my God.
It's like what all the men... So the women, famously, is a play that only has women characters. And they,
yes.
Their lives, because of when it was written, when it's set, their lives kind of revolve around the machinations of dumb men in their lives.
Uh-huh.
But we never actually see any of the men. It's just the lives of the women.
Yes.
So it's a cool idea for a play and a great movie. And Joan Crawford is in that and a lot of other greats. And anyway, I would be interested in seeing an adaptation that is like the men and...
You want to see the men?
I want to see the men.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
how unlike you.
I want to see them making out.
I see
the men in a hot tub.
That's what the movie is?
Yeah, they're all... This is why the women are so stressed out, because their men are all gay husbands.
Oh, my God.
That's... the men.
Blup, blup, blup.
Anyway.
Yes.
So, that's that. We do have... It's been a while since we talked about Model Land. But
it has been, but it's also late.
It is late, and... I have not read the latest chapter.
Oh, well, then there's no... you could make it up. What do you think happens?
I think... God, Jesus. Where... They just got... Oh, that's right. They just got back, I think, to Model Land.
They're back in Model Land.
And I think Creepy has just... Creamy
has entered the picture.
Yeah, she's just crawled over a wall looking creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And what do I think is going to happen? I think she is going to... Now, there's some sort of, like, day of decision type thing, or there's some, like, strut your stuff party... Or something going on in Model Land?
Isn't it the Seven tournament?
Maybe, something like that. Mm. I think she's going to stumble into the stadium and she is going to be the next top model.
Top model?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what
I predict. Let's see if that's what happens.
That's what I think is going to happen. They're going to love her look.
Oh.
You're going to love the way you look.
She's been to the Men's Warehouse?
Yes, that's my next musical.
Oh.
The Men's Warehouse.
You're going to love the way you look.
The best little warehouse in Texas.
That's fun.
Okay. Well, I can tell that you're sleepy because you just yawned huge at me.
Yeah, that is a clue.
So I need to put you into the bed, and then I need to pounce on you rub myself against you.
Oh, like human
James,
feet.
I'm going to, if I said you had a beautiful body, would you hold it against me?
Thought you were going to subvert my expectations, but then you didn't.
I didn't.
No.
But I did.
Oh.
By not doing what you thought.
It's true. I've been completely subverted.
You've been double subverted.
Sub Rosa, like in Star Trek.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. And check out my YouTube channel for... Oh, actually, no. Check out my... If you're a patron and you're listening to this, you have early ad-free access. So you can watch it right now. My Madeline Kahn video that has gone up for patrons. It's going to be going public in a day or two. But as patrons, you get early ad-free access. So you can watch it right now before everybody else and with no advertisements. So go check that out. It is a video about Madeline Kahn as a great gay ally who helped to put subversive queer theater on television in the mid-80s with the help of her college friend Charles and paved the way for some other Charleses and drag that we see on television to this day. So check that out, my newest Culture Cruise video that you can watch right this moment. James, anything to add? Great. Thank you. Wonderful. Everybody, thank you again for listening. Thank you for your support. Thank you for making all this possible. And I will blow you out now. Tookie de la creme.